This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Today marks 9 months since devastating flooding in the south central part of the state took the lives of 23 West Virginians, damaging hundreds, if not thousands, of homes and businesses. Many communities are still recovering from that flooding, but lawmakers in the House are attempting to take steps to make sure floods aren't as destructive in the future. Ashton Mara reports.
On June 23, 2016, West Virginia experienced some of the worst flooding in the state's storied history. During the past 52 years, 282 West Virginians have died in floods, including the 23 who perished last summer after historic water levels led to a federal disaster declaration in 12 counties. 9 months later, communities are still recovering from the high water. During a budget hearing in February, Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management Director Jimmy Jeanette told lawmakers once the state reaches a damage estimate of $150 million, the Federal Emergency Management Agency will begin funding recovery efforts at a 90-10 match, with 90% of the funds coming from the federal government, 10% from the state.
Now, the current numbers, we're at about 53% of that. The schools are the big dollar factor involved here, which will probably go close to $200 million as we finish that out.
Five schools were destroyed, and students are largely still in temporary classrooms. Lawmakers in the House, however, are not waiting for those totals to move forward with plans to help mitigate the level of damage the state could face in the future. Lawmakers, like Delegate Stephen Baldwin from hard-hit Greenbrier County.
After the flood, I found out that there'd been a flood protection bill, you know, sitting on the shelf for years, and like everybody else, I was floored.
Baldwin is talking about a 2004 flood protection plan, the product of a 26-agency task force developed to respond to flooding in the state. Delegate Brent Boggs says he remembers when the 365-page document was presented to the legislature.
And I know that it was certainly a comprehensive document, several hundred pages, and it had a lot of good recommendations. But like a lot of things in state government, it was produced, but a lot of it was shelved.
After the 2016 floods, interest in that shelved document reignited, from House Speaker Tim Armstead in particular, whose hometown of Elkview experienced its highest level of floodwaters in nearly 100 years. Armstead says that's why he's introduced House Bill 2935 to implement the recommendations of the 2004 report.
We know we can't prevent them, but there are things I think we can do to lessen the blow of flooding, to make sure people are well advised when a flood is about to occur, and to really just learn from the things we've learned through these disasters.
Armstead's bill creates a state flood protection planning council made up of representatives from the Division of Natural Resources, State Conservation Agency, Department of Environmental Protection, and others. Its chair would be required to report quarterly to a new interim legislative committee on flooding. Armstead approached several members of the chamber from flood-affected areas to join him in sponsoring the legislation, including Baldwin, who says the communication portion of the bill to him is key.
In our experience in Greenbrier County, communities were literally cut off from one another by the water, and there was no power, there were no phone lines, there was no good way to communicate with one another. And so what we were lacking from a governmental and non-governmental perspective, you know, churches and nonprofits, was the ability to coordinate and communicate in terms of our flood relief efforts.
Armstead says his flood protection legislation has bipartisan support this year, and he believes it will make it through the legislative process this session.
We may have disagreements on other issues, but when it comes to protecting our citizens from natural disasters like this, I think we all work together. And as I said, these pieces of legislation are bipartisan, and I think they'll have great support on both sides of the aisle.
Boggs, who is a sponsor of the bill, says even though his district wasn't impacted by the 2016 flood, all of the state's 55 counties have been affected by high water at some point.
So I think that we need to really get on board with this and then provide a legislative mechanism to work with all of the entities, pull out the flood plan again, and then go over it jointly and make sure that we implement just as much as we possibly can and make the citizens aware, make the counties aware, and let the state know that we're doing our job.
Armstead's bill has been referred to the House Government Organization Committee, but hasn't been placed on an agenda so far this session. The last day to approve bills in their originating chamber is March 29th. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Ashton Mara at the State House.
We turn now to one of the communities most impacted by that flooding for an update on their recovery progress 9 months later. Bob Henry Baber is the mayor of Richwood in Nicholas County, which was named a federal disaster area in July, just over a week after the storms. He spoke on a recent episode of the Legislature Today with host Ashton Mara.
Remind us what the damage was in Richwood in terms of the number of people or homes, in terms of dollar amounts to infrastructure. How did Richwood fare?
We talked before about the Doppler front, and I have that picture in my office. I think you saw it, which actually, the front, we had a little bubble over here, Clendenin, which got hit really hard, and then Birch River. But the front, actually, the heart of it was over Raynell and White Sulphur Springs, about 25 miles south of Richwood, which was a very lucky thing for us. We would have lost probably 95 people in our nursing home who were rescued by citizen volunteers and EMS and staff. So in terms of life, we feel really blessed. We got 12 inches of rain, so did White Sulphur Springs. But if that front had been over the high mountains, Richwood's a bowl, would have backed up against those mountains, we probably would have had 20 and we probably would have had significant loss of life. So ultimately, we were blessed. However, in terms of infrastructure, no town got hit as hard as Richwood. Everything on FEMA is like project work orders. It's broke out by claim, and it's like different. Like if your house was burned down, it would be like the bedroom, the bathroom. It's all that way. So Richwood has, at the moment, 23 project work orders, and the town closest to us, I believe, has 4 or 5. So you can see, in terms of infrastructure, we had about 5 times more damage than anybody else. We're looking at about $10 million of infrastructure damage to the city. That does not include houses.
Now, Richwood also lost 2 schools in the process, both Richwood Middle and Richwood High School. Talk to me about what's happened with those kids right now, where they are, where they're taking classes, and the process since then, because it's possible that Richwood might not get those schools back.
Well, it's possible, but we surely hope that does not happen. And, Mr. Justice has said it's not going to happen, and we're hoping for justice in Richwood. The middle school was, and I want to give the superintendent some credit here. We've fallen out over time, but in the beginning, I thought she was very adept at spinning the middle school students into Cherry River, and then she found an elementary school in Craigsville and spun the Richwood High School students into that school and got everybody into school, actually, in time, which was a pretty remarkable feat.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, the superintendent and the Board of Education also said, over our dead bodies, will these schools not come back to Richwood? But since then, they've headed south on us. So they got sold on the big money and moving everything over to Summersville. And frankly, we are resisting that strongly. I think the governor's with us. We hope the State Board of Education is with us. They have now ruled 5-0 to consolidate. Frankly, FEMA's mission is to restore the affected community. The affected community is Richwood, West Virginia. We are doing fairly well, but the rough price tag is being thrown around. This is still not really set on, but for Richwood High School and Middle School is $100 million. It's huge money. And it's also the heart and soul of the town, frankly. The Lumberjack Express, the band, everything about it. Our town is, our town has a 49% unemployment rate before the flood, and we lost the nursing home, our largest employer, 130. Yet, even with that 49% unemployment rate, we had a 98% graduation rate. Now, you can't find another school like that in the United States of America with that kind of poverty and that kind of graduation rate. So we want our schools, we're going to fight for our schools, and we're going to get our schools.
That was Richwood Mayor Bob Henry Baber speaking with Ashton Mara on the Legislature Today. Catch the program weeknights at 6:30 on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. In the midst of struggling with proposed state budget cuts, West Virginia University President E. Gordon Gee gave his State of the University address yesterday, emphasizing the university's importance to the state as a whole, as well as to its dedication to free speech. Ann Lee reports.
WVU President E. Gordon Gee used his State of the University address on Wednesday to emphasize his stance that the university is an investment for the state and not an item to be cut by state lawmakers. In his budget presented to lawmakers during his State of the State address, Governor Jim Justice's proposed budget cut 4.4% of the state appropriations given to WVU and Marshall University in the upcoming fiscal year. For WVU, that amounts to about $6 million.
However, last week, when legislative leaders suggested an even further reduction to higher education, it became imperative that we lead the charge to change the state strategy from cut to invest.
Last week, Republican legislative leaders announced they would cut state funding to higher education by $50 million in the 2018 budget that takes effect July 1st of this year. They have not presented a budget plan specifying how much of those reductions would come from WVU's budget. But over the past 3 years, the state's largest university has seen a $30 million reduction in state funding, leading to higher tuition for students. Gee says continuing to cut government alone would be detrimental to the state. He's calling on the university to help West Virginia focus on investing instead.
No one can define themselves into greatness by reducing their budgets willy-nilly.
Gee says most careers today require a college degree, and the university offers students a diverse array of programs that contribute to West Virginia's economy.
Nothing, I will say this unequivocally, nothing is more important right now than the power and opportunity for economic growth in this state created by our university. We are the economic engine. We hire more people. We've created more economic activity. We have a greater return on state investments than anything else in the state. So you support the things that brought you to the dance, and then you don't dance with things that shouldn't be danced with.
The address also underscored the university's devotion to the First Amendment. Gee said after the speech that he emphasized those values because of an increasingly polarized national political climate in which he says people are being intolerant and unavailable.
Well, I think what we see is on our campuses something which I think is very toxic in and of itself. I mean, you take a look at what happened at Berkeley, you take a look at what happened at Middlebury, you take a look at a number of places. I do not want to be part of a university in which people do not talk with each other, in which people limit who can come onto campus because they're fearful of how people react. We need to be a place in which all ideas are welcome. And that's what I mean. Unless we are a place that really does recognize and value everyone's voice and everyone's idea, then we're not truly a university.
Gee caught on universities in his address to unite in defense of free speech. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Ann Lee in Morgantown.
West Virginia University's men's basketball team continues its NCAA tournament journey tonight in San Jose. Clark Davis has more.
The Mountaineers will tip off in their seventh Sweet 16 game in the last 11 appearances in the NCAA tournament tonight at 7:39. The fourth-seeded Mountaineers will take on number one seed Gonzaga Bulldogs. Gonzaga has lost just one game all season, that against Brigham Young University. Gonzaga has won all three of the games it's played against WVU. The last was a December 2013 meeting that ended 80-76. WVU head coach Bob Huggins says the key to this year's March Madness run so far for the Mountaineers has been the play of the team's guards.
Did I know they were that good? I know this. They put an enormous amount of time in. They're in the practice facility 12 months out of the year. And, it's great when you don't have to kind of tell people to go in there. They go in there. And you can see. I mean, Tariq came in not a very good shooter. He's a pretty good shooter now. JC came in and was not real consistent. He's pretty consistent now.
The guards that Huggins is talking about are juniors Javon Carter and Daxter Miles Jr. and senior Tariq Phillip. The Mountaineers have become known for their defense during the past few seasons and have been dubbed Press Virginia for their full court pressure. But a little-known fact is that the Mountaineers scored a school-record 2,956 points this year, besting the previous record of 2,884 set in 1959. Tariq Phillips says the guards and the team deserve much more respect for their effectiveness on the offensive end.
First couple years here, they thought of us as defensive players, but coaching staff instilled a lot of confidence in us. helped us develop our offensive game, and we became pretty good offensive players.
WVU met the Zags once before in the NCAA tournament in 2012. The Bulldogs won that contest 77-54. Javon Carter says they've all progressed because they've all been playing with a little extra motivation.
All year, we've been telling ourselves that we got the best group of guards in the country, and we truly believe that. So when it's time for us to play, we go out there, we give it our all, and sometimes it works, but we're gonna put forth 100%, and we're going to live and die with it.
If the Mountaineers can advance in the Western Regional in San Jose, they'll take on the winner of the Arizona-Xavier game on Saturday for a chance to advance to the Final Four. It would be the Mountaineers' second Final Four appearance since 2010. Gonzaga is one of just three teams to appear in each of the last three Sweet 16 contests, including this year. The Bulldogs are 1-1 in the past two. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Clark Davis.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content.